We must all do our part to reduce the risk and impact of wildfire in Florida. Pick up yard debris, create defensible space around your home, and prepare an emergency kit. Preparing for a hurricane is similar to preparing for wildfires. Being wildfire ready is being hurricane ready. Hurricane debris puts us at greater risk for wildfire. It's not about if a wildfire will ignite, but when. Learn how you can be ready for wildfires at BeWildfireReadyFL.com. A message brought to you by the Florida Forest Service.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Got any rights yet? I do.
Just like that little critter told me down by the coal creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty, beer in the tackle box, out on the flat rock. Baiting that hook with only the right look, lure in the sunshine, ripples in the sweet tide, rubber's going out of sight, even if it tastes all night. Ooh, I'm gonna catch me a winner, cause I kinda like a bit, and I don't.
Good morning, fishing fans. This is Captain Debbie Hansen welcoming you to another edition of Real Talk Radio on 98.1 FM and 770 AM here in Southwest Florida. You can also tune in live this morning from anywhere if you head on over to ESPNSWFL.com or if you download the ESPN Southwest Florida app. It is producer Rick Church behind the glass this morning, and here in the studio, my guest co-host is Boundless Pursuit podcast host and multi-species angler, David Graham. What's going on, David? Good to have you back.
I'm glad to be back. You got it nice and air-conditioned in here, and I needed it.
I know, right? This feels awesome in here this morning, given the fact that it's already, what, over 80 degrees at 7 o'clock in the morning?
I felt like I'm walking underwater out there just from my Jeep to the car. It's so humid.
Yeah, which has pretty much been our life for the past couple of weeks here in Southwest Florida, right?
Nightmare.
It's crazy. Crazy. But I can't wait to get into our conversation this morning. I'm totally looking forward to it. A lot has happened since you were here in the studio back in February. You went out to Idaho. You were on this quest for giant sturgeon out in Idaho after your sturgeon catch here in Florida. So I want to talk about that.
For sure.
And kind of comparing the two situations. And then you've been out chasing some Goliath grouper.
Mm-hmm.
And geez, what else has been going on? You've been out fishing with the family a little bit.
Yeah, I've done some small things like that here and there just to try to stay active. I mean, I think I'm similar to most people where I have narrow windows of time to even get out between work. So it's like I got to take whatever conditions I can get.
Yeah.
And you know how Florida is. Sometimes they project a 10% chance of rain, and then 10 minutes later, it's a 90% chance of rain. So it's, you know, you stay light on your feet, have a plan A, B, C, and D, and then just hit the road and hope for the best. But other than that, I've got more big trips coming up, one big one in September. So I'm already tying rigs. I'm already getting gear ready for that. That's a big endeavor there. I'm going to South America. So that's a bit. And normally, I don't even prepare well at all. I'm like the least prepared person you've ever met. I show up with not enough stuff. But I'm already trying to get things ready because I can't get out there in that jungle and be ill-prepared.
Yeah, well, and we'll have to get more into that, too. And also, you are coming up on a big milestone for your podcast, and that's the 25th episode, which releases this coming week.
Yep.
So, I mean, what we'll talk more about this, but how are you feeling now that you've been producing these podcasts every week? You've talked to just a huge range of anglers from all over the world. I mean, listening to some of your episodes, it really covers everything from, holy smokes, arapaima to paddlefish to you name it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, you've made all these connections and you've talked to all these, like I said, amazing anglers from all over. And I'm sure there's some common themes that some of these people share with you on the show from time to time.
Sure. I mean, it's some of that. It's the cool thing is, I don't know, over the years, I've gotten to know so many amazing anglers that you would, you know, you don't know them. They exist kind of under the radar. They're too busy doing what they love. And a lot of these guys have day jobs. As I mentioned before we started recording, some of them are UPS drivers, some of them are painters, some of them work factory jobs. And then on the weekends, they're doing these phenomenal fishing trips. And I'm like, you know, this is what the weekend warrior needs to hear. Like the common angler who has ambitions to do something great, but is somewhat bogged down by, I don't know, normal lifestyle. Because it's very motivating for somebody like me. I work in a factory. I live that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I want to do these trips. I need to see a proof of concept. I need to see someone else that's doing it. I need to understand how they're budgeting for these things. And so, I don't know. I just have these conversations with these guys. It's extremely motivating, but it's also a good way to network with people that I could potentially meet up with down the road. A lot of times at the end of the conversation, that's what's happening. We get off air.
You guys are getting together to go fish.
We start exchanging.
You're planning a trip.
Yeah, we start exchanging invites. We're like, hey, man, we need to get together. I got an opening this time this summer. So it's been a really, really fun thing to do, just if nothing else, then
making
to
those
connect
connections.
with other guys.
Yeah. And, you know, that's just it. That's the cool part of it is – getting to know some of these unsung heroes who probably don't have the time to post all over Instagram.
Yeah.
But you getting the opportunity to meet and talk with some of these people is just, it's really cool. So I can't wait to talk about some of the guests that you've had on and some of the things that you've learned and pulled from those conversations. So we're coming to you live from Stan and Haney Boulevard in downtown Estero, Florida this morning. We'll be live on air until 10 a.m. with David. If you're not able to stay tuned for the entire show or you want to head back over to the website to catch up on previous shows, just go over to ESPNSWFL.com. We're going to open up the text line this morning. So if you've got questions for David, go ahead and shoot us a text, 239-337-3776, 239-337-ESPN, or let us know if you've been out there on the water over the past week braving the heat here in Southwest Florida. And in the meantime, I'm going to head on over to line one. We got Nick Davis with 239 Flies standing by. Hey, Nick, good morning.
Dad and Debbie, David, top of the morning to you.
Back at you. How are things in the fuzzy empire of 239 Flies?
Just scorching hot, sweaty, and ready for a bus trip to A28. my goodness, this week has been sweltering.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It seems like every time we stepped outside the shop, it was like, all right, everybody back inside right now for safety. But been one of those weeks. It's definitely been busy. You know, I guess this is a great place to advertise. We keep our AC set to 72 during the day, so feel free to come on in, get out of the heat, enjoy the free AC. Busy week despite how just ridiculously hot it's been. So
yeah, that's good to hear. People are probably taking a little bit of break during the afternoon to head inside and tie a few flies.
Yeah, you know, it seems like there's been an afternoon rush. We've had some boats pull into the parking lot because you could definitely pull your boat into the parking lot at 239 Flies. Jim about threw his back out a 17th time, removing a couple of the parking curbs. So now we got a nice pull through for boats with trailers on them.
Oh, nice! But, so in other words, 239 Flies is becoming the drive through of fly shops.
We're working on a drive through. I mean, I really think. Like right now, we'll definitely Lance will definitely run your order out to you. You know, we'll be a curbside service type of operation. But we really are striving to get to that window. You know, with headsets and you know, just card readers and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I can't wait.
There you go. That'll be just perfect. You need some flies? Just pull right on through.
I'd like to have a number of set combos. You know, order a number 12 with with a chartreuse clouser, you know, and, you know, a Topo Chico.
Oh, totally. It's like a fly fishing happy meal. Come on now.
You need to stop while you're ahead. You're letting everybody know your million-dollar idea.
Every box has a toy in it. Everybody wins.
Yes. So what else has been going on? What are the reports like coming in from the guides in the shop, Nick? What's going on out there fishing-wise?
You know, Estero Bay's been a little slow this week. Pine Island's been a little slow this week. You know, we got some water trouble we're dealing up with around Cape Coral, but few snook are still around. Few tarpon are still around. My buddy Drew down in Marco Island, got out around the 4th of July and managed to keep all of his fingers, and not due to fireworks, due to, you know, wrestling with some tarpon. So there's still a couple of tarpon around. It's getting a little late and getting a little warm, but you can still get it done. Yeah, there's starting to be some snook along the beaches a little bit more. Not quite as thick as they were a couple of years ago yet, but they're starting to show up. So hopefully we get some continue to get some good water down south, and we get a few more snook showing up. But redfish bite's been kind of slow this week, but you never know. It could, you know, I've had days in Estero Bay in July where I felt like I was going to melt on the front of my buddy John's boat, and there's, you know, 200 redfish in front of you. So we'll keep watching and see what happens.
Yeah, I think that key is just, man, getting out there super early, getting it done super early, or fishing late. And we really haven't had all that much rain lately, and that rain really tends to bring down that water surface temperature. And I think we've
It was not pouring rain last night or yesterday, the last couple of days. So we had some rain last week, but this week's been spotty at best. And you're absolutely right. When you got to cool off the water just a little bit, it's not happening if it's not pouring.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Anything else going on? You got a tying night coming up, I know.
We do. We got a fly tying night at the shop. It's going to be the last Wednesday of the month. I think it was the 27th. And I'm going to say I'm not going to look up my calendar again. I got to learn to realize, check the date before I call you, that, you know, Saturday morning things are usually a little fuzzy. But I got it on the front page of the website. It's the last Wednesday of the month. And also, awesome. 828. You know, for those of us who, you know, frequent back and forth, they're going to fly tying night this coming Wednesday, the 12th. Yep, bring your vise, bring your tools, bring your thread. We got a prize for the person that attends both.
Nice. Yeah, and what's the report been like from up in the mountains, Nick? So, Brian, give you any scoop on how the trout fishing has been up there?
Yeah, it's been good up there. Not a lot of big fish this week. Ton of cooperating brook trout and ton of about 16 inches.
Yep.
You know, nothing too big this week, but, you know, Brian's been getting out in the mornings and sending me pictures, and it's wet wading in the water. Like, he's not sweating up there. That guy is, he's hopping through creeks that are, you know, a perfect, you know, 60 degrees with 75 degree air temp, just living life. So
yeah.
If you need a break from the
heat, we're all jealous, you know, right here, yeah. Right now. Yeah.
I tell him every time I talk to him, I'm like, bro, you're literally living my dream. Like,
when you get a day off or a few days off, you kind of have that luxury of being able to run back and forth. So that's awesome.
Every once in a while, it's gonna open up a little bit more here in another year or so. But I'm very
good,
very fortunate in that aspect. But yeah, wish I could see him more.
Good. Well, I have to say, I had a bunch of anglers come and fish with me last week from Ohio, and a bunch of them stopped into the shop and had nothing but great things to say. So keep up all the great work. Yeah.
And thanks for sharing that, Debbie. You know, I appreciate that. We try to do a good job over there. We really do.
Jimbo and crew are always doing a great job. I mean, everyone feels welcome when they stop in there, and they always get their questions answered and get pointed in the right direction when it comes to the gear that they need for fishing down here. So, like I said, keep it up.
Well, thank you. That's what it's about. Fly fishing is hard and confusing, and we are here to help.
Yeah, and then you can just swing by and get your happy meal of flies on the way
out. Happy meal of flies. Everybody wins. There's a toy in every box.
That's just it. All right, Nick. Well, thank you for calling and checking in this morning. We'll catch up with you. Actually, no, next Saturday we'll be off air because of ICAST, but we'll catch up with you.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, we'll catch up with you the following Saturday. So we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. I'll have the report from Jimbo from ICAST.
Yes. Well, Jimbo's actually going to ICAST?
Jimbo's going to ICAST. Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
He's looking forward to it.
Okay.
I have to work during a couple of those days, and so I won't be able to go. But But Jim is going to go and check it out. He's like, this looks fun. I'm like, it's an absolute blast.
Yeah, he's taking a break.
All of the after parties and all of the day parties to go to, and then all the work that actually kind of might get done.
So. Well, cool. Hopefully I will see him up there.
Yep. I'll let him know to look for you.
All right, Nick. Thanks again, and we'll catch up with you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. Talk
all right.
to you soon.
Take care.
Bye.
That is Nick Davis calling in with 239 Flies. They are in the Beach Row Plaza in Bonita Springs. Stop in and see them. So, all right, David, jumping back into our conversation here, I know that we talked a little bit about your milestone that you're coming up on the podcast and your Idaho sturgeon trip. So this was back in, was it March when you went out there?
I think it was March. I don't know, I've lost track of time. It was like right after the last time I was here. I think I was even talking about
Maybe it was the upcoming trip.
You were.
So it must have been, maybe it was closer to the end of February.
I think it was. It was end of February, early March. Oh, geez.
You're timing that trip based on when you know those sturgeon are going to be.
Well, sort of. It actually, according to the guy that was out there, Steve, a buddy of mine, that wasn't even the most optimal time.
Really?
He said, you know, but it was the only window of time that I had. So the thing is, I had carried over a little bit of unused vacation time from the year before. And if I didn't use it by April, I lose it. So I'm like, well, I got to do some kind of trip. So I was like, well,
now's the time.
I was like, you know, I already knew about the South America thing looming. I'm like, I'm going to squeeze in an attempt here and just shoot for a Hail Mary on these white sturgeon. And but he did tell me, like, it's the time of year that they basically have like a mini migration. It's a weird area of the country for white sturgeon because, you know, it's a species of fish naturally that, you know, moves from the ocean to the rivers. But in Idaho, they're landlocked. But they have like a small migration where they move up river into these lakes. And he told me, he's like, there's a chance we might be able to catch the real big ones as they're making their way up river towards the lake. So,
okay, so when you say real big ones, define what that means, because I know the size of the one that you ended up landing, and it was an absolute monster.
Right. Well, so like, I don't know. I mean, it's a bizarre thing because I ended up catching one that was just over 6 feet, and that's a small one, but it's still a big fish. But by Idaho standards, I think anything that's over 7.5, 8 feet long is now you're talking about a real big one.
Yeah.
And we ended up getting one that was 9'2". Which is just an incredible stroke of luck. But it was a double. I hooked the 9'2" sturgeon. My buddy Josh hooked one that was 8'6", and we were fighting them
insane.
Simultaneously. Yeah, it was wild. But I mean, you're talking about a fish that can get 12 feet long.
Yeah.
Up in, you know, British Columbia and some of those types of river systems, but still a 9-foot freshwater fish is a formidable thing to try to tackle. Land-based in these very powerful rivers.
Land-based, too, is just the crazy part about it. And we've only got a couple of minutes, but just set us up, because we're going to get into the story, because there were some things that happened en route during the fight. I mean, just reading your blog, I was just totally captivated by this story. But so talk about the gear that you're using for these fish.
Okay. Yeah, it's like your standard surf casting gear, really. It's the kind of stuff I've used for sharks, for alligator gar. They're 12-foot-long ugly stick surf casting rods and like pin 8,500 live liner spinning reels with 150-pound braid. Then they have very specific like rigging regulations you have to use for the sturgeon, where there's like a requirement for a breakaway weight, like a pound of lead, but it's got to be able to break away. So I don't remember how that works. You like tie it on there with mono that like has a break threshold of something. I don't know. Steve was the mastermind behind that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know, Steve. Tie my rigs.
Steve was your host. So yeah. He's the one that lives out there and that put you and your buddy Josh up.
I think the most interesting thing is that in Idaho, you're allowed to use certain game fish as bait. So we were literally using cut chunks of rainbow trout for bait. Now, that felt weird, but I guess.
And your buddy Josh actually hooked what was a world record sucker as you guys were bait fishing, right?
So, yeah, you know, I'll keep this appropriate for the radio, but he's got several world records now for different sucker species, so he likes to call himself the Chub King. But he's got a world record chub. He's got a world record now, large-scale sucker, and he's got some other pending one out of Virginia that he just caught. But, yeah, he kept catching these gigantic suckers. I'm like, stop catching world records and catch something we can use for bait. I'm like, we need bait. He's over here trying to catch world records. But
so he just automatically fishes with IGFA standard gear anytime he's bait fishing or doing anything out there.
He's big into the – well, this is all tackle world record that we're talking here. That particular – I mean, it's an
obscure – the one that he caught on your –
yeah, it's an obscure species that not a lot of people are probably chasing. The current record was like 3 pounds, 9 ounces. His was – 7 pounds, 10 ounces
totally
or something.
Totally blew the last record.
So it was like, you know, a lot of people probably catch those, don't even know what they are. But yeah. Well, what's funny is that he came to us where we were posted up with several of them in the bottom of his kayak, and like 3 of them were world records. So he just chose the biggest one of the 3 to keep.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. No. So that was, you guys were out just catching bait, and that was the first day of your trip out in Idaho. And you were out there for what, 2 or 3 days?
We were out there for 3 days and we had 2 good fishing days. The third day just was sort of a disaster, but it didn't matter. We'd already accomplished what we wanted to accomplish. Yeah. I'll go all that way, spend all that money and go through all that hell just to catch one fish if it's the fish.
And sometimes it doesn't
lifetime.
Even happen, yeah. Right? I mean, that's just when you're targeting a specific species like that, especially doing that type of fishing, it's not always going to happen.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of days where you're just hanging out and waiting, kind of like the conversation we had when you were up in North Florida. So
very similar.
All right. Well, we will finish the story when we come back. So stay tuned. You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida at ESPNSWFL.com and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app, presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
Works best in the night. Everybody's missing the sun. Everybody's sleeping through the afternoon. Can you have any fun?
A message brought to you by the Florida Forest Service. Debris from hurricanes is wildfire fuel that remains on the ground ready to burn. Being wildfire ready is being hurricane ready. Protect your life, home, and community at BeWildfireReadyFL.com.
Geek Culture Congress is for the nerd in you.
Yeah, this that movie really had, this was some of Groot's best moments, fight scenes. It's like Groot doing some CrossFit, doing some workouts.
Look for Geek Culture Congress on bpodstudios.com and wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Fishing is life! Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, Boundless Pursuit podcast host, multi-species angler, David Graham. How's it going over there in the co-host seat, David?
Still going. Still good. The caffeine shot is starting to kick in, so I'm feeling good.
Yeah, clearly mine has too. Plus, you know, when Rick plays some good tunes, you gotta just belt out a fishing is life every once in a while. Just part of the gig. So, all right, let's get back into this conversation. I want you to back up a little bit because I think we started to talk about some of the gear that you were using when you were targeting these monster white sturgeon out in Idaho. But talk a little bit about the conditions, the terrain, and what you're dealing with when you get out there.
Oddly enough, a lot of that stuff is part of the allure for me. I'm real specific on like how I want my experience to go. So a lot of people, when they think white sturgeon, or if people have looked up, if you look up white sturgeon fishing on YouTube right now, they're going to be running jet boats up in the Fraser River with big gear, with some, it's just this different game. And that's cool, and I would love to do that. And in due time, maybe I will, for a shot at one of the really giant ones.
Yeah.
I very specifically wanted to go out there with little gear, small gear, do it with my feet on the ground, catch one from shore. And that's hard to pull off up in British Columbia. It's hard to pull off in some of those more established rivers. But Idaho, you've got a very real shot at catching one from land, like the same way you'd catch catfish, except these are 9-foot-long, 300-pound catfish. So that was important to me. I really like it to be a more intimate, I guess that's the word, experience.
Yeah.
So I came out there. I don't remember. I had probably 2 boat-style rods because we tried to catch them out of kayaks.
But you're still having to hike down basically like a ravine or a steep hill to get down to the riverbed.
So the best spots are pretty remote and hard to get to. And Idaho has just kind of got an unforgiving terrain as it is. It's just mountains and rocks and mud. And at that time of year, it was just starting to kind of thaw out from some areas were still snowing. It snowed on top of us while we were there, but it wasn't sticking. So it was just that nasty wetness. Everything was cold and wet and moist. And we had tried to drive in. You know, you're on these canyons. The river cuts through gorges and canyons. So it's not just normal bank, but the vehicle that we were in wasn't exactly equipped to handle all terrain. I don't even know why we used this car, but we basically off-roaded to this one spot, and it got real sketchy fast. I mean, we are teetering on the edges of these cliffs and mud, and you're sliding. And, you know, you go up a hill and come down a hill. As we're going down, you're really just sliding. Apply the brakes and still be drifting down this mud with a cliff on one side. I'm like, this is not good. I'm all for doing dangerous things and pushing the limits, but even I was like, I don't know about all this.
Yeah, well, and you guys had an incident when you were en route to the spot. You're driving down the interstate. It's like sleeting and snowing.
Yeah, that it's a really weird place because we would be driving across land where it's as clear can be. Everything's dry and just dirt, and then 20 minutes later, you're in snow and ice. It's the elevation changes happen and you don't even realize it. And at one point we're driving through like a blizzard, like almost zero visibility condition, ice all over the roads. We're passing by cars in the ditches left and right of other people that had slid off the road. Like, man, this is getting kind of tough. And at one point I'm in the back seat and this 18-wheeler in front of us locked up on its brakes and it's just sliding and we're careening towards it. So Steve, who's commanding the vehicle, you know, he put his brakes on and it had no effect. We're just drifting. So he pulled us into the median, and now medians in this area are like cliffs. There's these massive boulders. You know, you've got these like cliffs on either side of you. So like the rocks that tumble down end up in the medians.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we go into this median just, you know, we're just drifting. We're just sliding through the ice.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't know why our minds went there, but it was kind of like
you're like, I really want to catch one of these monster white sturgeon. However,
it was just
it might be at the expense of my life here.
It was entertaining that, like, you go from this swing in emotion of being in sheer terror to, like, elation instantaneously. Because when he got the vehicle back on the road, you know, Josh, Steve, and I all started cheering at how awesome what just happened to us was. I'm like, that's how stupid we are. Like, this trip just got 10 times better.
We almost died, but that was really cool.
I'm already computing the storyline in my head. And, you know, it's kind of been a running theme in a lot of my fishing adventures. Like, the biggest and best fish I've ever caught were always, like, before or after some kind of, like, impending doom took place. Like, if there was a chance for severe failure and we pushed through it, that's always when I catch my best fish. So after that happened, we all started joking. We're like, we're catching something big today. Like, we almost just died. So now I know it's about to go down. And then we have our situation on the cliff itself. But, yeah, essentially we had to hike into this spot because the vehicle just can't do it. So you're climbing down cliffs.
And you're parked how far away from the actual area where you're fishing? Miles?
It was probably a mile. But the thing is, it's such an unforgiving terrain. It's like at 1 mile at elevation, and it's mud and it's snow, and it's giant rocks, and you're slipping and sliding, and we're carrying so much
1 mile felt like 50.
It was a disaster. It was a nightmare. But it, and you know, you forgot about that quickly because we hooked up probably within 15 minutes of getting there.
Wow.
With, you know, 17'6" worth of sturgeon. We doubled up on these two monster sturgeons. So, you know, all those woes were quickly forgotten about. But
yeah.
It was really the hike out of there that was probably where you... It's one thing to hike down and gravity's doing half the work, but right. Getting out of there was...
A whole other story.
Was brutal, but...
You guys were fishing cut baits. You were fishing cut trout. And so what was the experience like from the time you hook up to this? It was not over 9 feet. So what was it, 9'2",
And I have no idea. I don't have experience with sturgeon. I had caught a 6-footer the day before that was an exceptionally powerful animal. So the river that you're in is like... Again, it's like gorge and cliff on the side of you. And that cliff continues down into the water. So like we're fishing in this incredibly deep hole. And that's where these sturgeon stage. It's kind of like a big eddy hole. They just, you know, they make their way up river. They make a pit stop into these holes and take a break. And then they continue up river. So you got a narrow window to catch them as they're making their way up river.
Yeah.
And we just, it's just a stroke of good luck. But my buddy Josh hooked up with one and he's fighting it. And, you know, you want to bring the other lines in the water because it's an unbelievably powerful fish. And you don't want to jeopardize the other guy's catch by it entangling your line. So, you know, I made the decision. I'm leaving my rod, you know, in the rod holder because his headed the opposite direction my lines were. But while he was fighting it, you know, I keep peeking down, you know, downriver where my rod is. Sure enough, I look over and I see my rod start going down. I'm like, that's no big deal. My bait runner's on. I got time to get there. But then the whole rod holder starts getting pulled through the mud down. Like, it's getting freight trained so hard. It's like ripping the rod holder out of the ground. So I sprinted over there, and I engaged this fish, and I realized my bait runner wasn't on.
Oh.
I don't know how it didn't get pulled out in the river. But so, you know, I grab hold of the rod, and I try to get the rod tip high. The thing is, if these fish get out in the main current and they get that current behind them, and they do that, this is a smart fish. They use the current to their advantage. They're not a dummy. They don't try to fight the current. They take the current, you know, and use it against you. So it was astonishingly powerful. I can't relate it to any other freshwater fish. It was substantially more powerful than, you know, I know we mentioned this last time I was here, but, you know, I've caught alligator gar that were almost 8 feet long. I caught the Gulf sturgeon in northern Florida, but this thing had unimaginable power to where I was really grappling with the reality, this thing, I don't think I can stop it. This is too much. I immediately started questioning the gear that I had. I'm like, I don't think this is up to the task. This is another animal we're fighting with here. But I didn't want to say that out loud because I didn't want it to come to the surface and only be like, 6.5 feet long, and then I look like a wimp, you know. So I'm kind of underplaying it the whole time, but I've probably fought this thing continuously for 30 minutes, and it's no give. And my sturgeon didn't jump. A lot of sturgeon will jump. This thing just played power the whole time. But I would probably relate it to like a. I've caught sandbar sharks that felt like a shark.
Mm-hmm.
It was just blinding speed and immense power that I've like never felt with a freshwater fish. And I don't think I ever will ever again.
And
it was
do they
incredible
just try to
power.
Get back down towards the bottom?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it was running towards the current. Now I think the bigger fish, they're smart. They know what they're doing. It's like a very cunning fish. And I think that, and there's like the, you know, there's bluffs underwater too. They'll take you and they'll try to get you in the rocks and break you off in there. So, you know, I started muscling this thing and finally got it up to the top right around the time that Josh got his fish up. His fish was 8'6". Mine came up beside it, and I knew it looked similar in size, if not slightly bigger. And, I mean, you grab a hold of this thing and immediately realize the magnitude of what you're witnessing. For me, that's the fascinating part, is like bearing witness to the animal itself. You know, you want the experience of being out there, but... A prehistoric animal like that is really like, I don't know, you just get hit with such a sense of like awe
The pictures are absolutely incredible. So people have to check out. They're on your Instagram at Boundless Pursuit. And you're in the water with this 9-foot monster white sturgeon. And this was after you had been fighting it for
a
half
dead.
Hour.
I mean,
and talk
I
about
had
like
no
what is the
left.
Water temperature at this point?
The water temperature is freezing. Again, it's snowing and thawing, and the snowing and thawing, and then this river's flowing from an area that's snowing, so it's coming from an even colder place. But it was very important to me to get in the. I don't know why, but I was like, I'm not going to come all the way out here and not get great photos of this fish. They get like.
And the only way to get a good photo is to actually get in the water.
Yeah,
with
I want
the
to
fish.
Get in there with the thing. So, like, sturgeon are weird in that, like, they go asleep when they're upside down. As soon as you flip them over, though, and they snap too, you're in a wrestling match with a, you know, 400-pound muscle. And it was, I had no energy left. It was everything I could do to get in this water. I'm sitting on the edge of basically an underwater cliff, so I'm kind of scared the whole time I'm going to slide off and be swimming. and I'm doing everything I can to pull this thing kind of halfway into my lap. I wanted to be able to show how big the fish was. I couldn't get it out of the water. I couldn't pull it up high enough to where you could actually see the fish. But yeah,
you can see enough of it.
Yeah. Well, that almost makes a better photo when half of it's concealed. It leaves a little bit to the imagination to wonder like how far out does that thing's body extend?
Just incredible.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where I was like, I need my moment with this fish. I need to wrap my arms around this thing and, like, you know, and feel this and see it. And then, but it was phenomenal. It's an incredible
experience.
So the fish
was somewhat subdued at this point.
To a point, as soon as I rolled it over, I mean, I've got even photos where I'm like fighting with everything I have to hold it in place. When I rolled it over, it was, make no mistake, it's trying to get away.
Yeah.
And it swings its head, and it was tossing me around like a rag doll. Like, it would swing its head, my whole entire body would, like, go with it. Like, I wasn't even there. It was just moving. It was pushing through me, like, knocking me out of the way. I'm like, take the pictures. Let's get this.
Can you hurry up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's wild.
Gosh.
It's kind of dangerous. My waders started filling with the water, so I kind of knew we're – when this is over, we got to get out of here because we're going to have a real problem on our hands with hypothermia.
Yeah, and your buddy Josh is in this like thick fleece sweatshirt with
clothes.
He's like in a hoodie. Oh my gosh! All right, well, we got to head off to another break, but more with David when we come back. You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida, ESPNSWFL.com, and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app, presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
Just watching her blonde hair sunburn, stare at them white caps rolling over. Laid back in a thrift store beach chair, dropping limes in a Corona.
We must all do our part to reduce the risk and impact of wildfire in Florida. Pick up yard debris, create defensible space around your home, and prepare an emergency kit. Preparing for a hurricane is similar to preparing for wildfires. Being wildfire ready is being hurricane ready. Hurricane debris puts us at greater risk for wildfire. It's not about if a wildfire will ignite, but when. Learn how you can be ready for wildfires at BeWildfireReadyFL.com. A message brought to you by the Florida Forest Service.
With the Mania and Loren Morning Show's War of the Roses, we're helping partners find out whether or not they're being cheated on.
We are not together anymore. We broke up 2 months ago, and we've had plenty of conversations. I had to get a new number because she wouldn't stop harassing me.
It wasn't that clear to me, okay? And you were cheating on me with Natalie then. I was right. I wasn't crazy.
There's no trust, so you can't really have a relationship if you don't trust the partner you're with.
We just ask that you're actually in a relationship.
Listen to Manny and Loren's War of the Roses wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio online at ESPNSWFL.com. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Good morning, and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, David Graham, host of the Boundless Pursuit podcast, multi-species angler. Check him out. His podcast is on Spotify, YouTube. You can also find him at boundless-pursuit.com and on Instagram at boundless-pursuit. And we are actually going to head straight on over to the phones because we've got Captain Jim Fortman calling in with a report from the 10,000 Islands. So let's grab Jim's call. Hey, Cap, what's going on down there in your neck of the woods?
Well, it's a little hot.
Yeah, just a smidge.
And then it rains, and then it's humid and hot.
That's pretty much the cycle. That's how it goes.
Pretty much the cycle this week.
Yep.
It's been a very interesting week this week. So it's started off this week with a really good trout bite coming off of Sunday. Then, you know, things kind of got out of control around my area. I've been really focusing in the center portion of the 10,000 Islands because everybody wants to chase a silver king. And they have been very
vulnerable this week.
Now, if you're looking for other species like sea trout and redfish have been really congregating to the south, hanging out on mud flats around, you know, basically anywhere there's moving water on a mud flat. There were actually been really good numbers of them between the mid islands to the outer islands. And actually on the high tide, which is first thing right now, if you're not there, you're going to miss out. The high tide back by the creek mouths. So.
And Jim, what size are you seeing on those reds roughly right now?
The reds are actually been averaging between 20 to about 30 inches. So there actually have been some decent redfish.
Uh-huh.
It's just finding them. And the only best thing I can tell everybody, if you see the white gulls flying around, there ain't going to be any redfish around because that's where the tarpon are.
And what
a lot of white gulls around.
What have you been using primarily to target those reds? Are you using cut baits right now because that water temperature is just so dang hot? What are you doing?
Actually, first thing in the morning, they've been actually very active. So right on the turn of the tides, you get out there, the water's a little cooler. They're actually feeding more in the mornings till about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and then it kind of dies off. And that goes the same with the sea trout on the outside. You want to go to the near shore wrecks if you're looking for some dinner. There's been a lot of sea trout out there. Or actually head towards Goodland because there's been a lot of sea trout up there towards Goodland as well. Primarily just the brown and gold jigs have been working best. That's been basically the go-to.
Brown and gold.
Yep. And then I'd have to say the redhead on the jig has been working really good. The other has been topwater first thing in the morning. That's because we've actually had some just slicked out conditions first thing in the morning.
Nice and
I will
calm
warn a couple people less because I actually lost two topwaters this week, two bull sharks. They do like to take the topwater as well. And there has been quite a few bull sharks still in the area.
Yeah, that's got to be one heck of a blow up on topwater.
Well, it's actually kind of more of a subtle and then just an explosion and then 3 seconds of wine screaming and then...
Gone.
Wow, I just tied that on. That one was a brand new one.
Yeah, so you are probably losing a few of your walk the dog lures this time of year, huh?
Yeah, I'll be hitting the store here real soon. So, yeah, I stock up. I'm going to see what I can find in ICAST, hopefully on Friday. So.
Yeah, well, hopefully I'll see you up there. So what is the water temperature been in your area down there, Jim? Give us an idea.
It has actually been 84, 85 first thing in the morning. And
okay.
Hitting almost touching at 90 in the afternoon, depending on the weather pattern. It's because, like, give you an idea, Sunday, I worked Sunday and then I worked on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday and Wednesday, probably the hottest days this week.
Yeah.
And then... Then the last 2 days, we actually had a lot of offshore storms that were coming in and actually kind of cooled down the weather.
Mm-hmm.
We did have some wind pickup yesterday, which was unusual because they didn't forecast that. So, and if anybody else didn't notice, the weather forecast guys have been getting it wrong consistently all week. the water's been kind of getting a little bit cooler in my area because of those rains. I will say the back around the creeks The water has been just crystal clear. It's been actually gorgeous back there.
Yeah, we could have used a little bit of that rain up this way because we did not see as much rain this past week.
Yeah, no. And it yesterday, I think, was about the craziest. If you were in Everglades City, you were getting dumped on.
Yeah.
If you were up in the Port of the Islands where I was at, you were like, I hope the wind doesn't change. It was pretty ominous around towards Everglades City and by Ochoapi. Those storms are really just real tall thunderheads. We were seeing the bolts of lightning and
water spouts.
No. These were all right there on the glades. They were right inside the island. So
yeah.
We weren't seeing any water. I'm sure there were a couple of water spouts because there were a couple of big storms that were off Marco yesterday.
Yeah,
so I'm sure they had a couple.
Oh, I'm sure they're out there. Hey, Jim, real quick, I wanted to ask you too. Have you been seeing any of those big black drum?
They are not. They don't really kind of appear on the full moon.
Okay.
But I did. We saw a small school of them yesterday.
Yep.
Heading out, they're kind of in the very back bays on the high tide.
Gotcha.
So if you see something waking on the flats like we did yesterday,
mm-hmm.
they were a little elusive. It wasn't those giant schools that we normally see. There were probably only about 15 or 20 of them in that school,
mm-hmm.
Which is a small school for my area. You've seen the
oh, yes. Yes, yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, we saw a couple of them waking. They were really keeping their distance from us, so they were kind of more on the move than feeding.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two is they're not the only things that are waking on the flats right now. There are some bull sharks that have been hanging out on the flats as well. The one fish I did leave out because it is kind of like the grand scheme of things down south, the snook. There are still quite a few big girls that have been hanging out around the outside islands and the around any kind of points where there's a lot of heavy moving water.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find some drop-offs where there's about 4 feet to 5 feet drop-offs from a flat,
and some really good current.
Probably going to encounter a 30-something inch snook. So I had a client yesterday. He's only caught just kind of the dink trout snook that we usually see on the beach, the 20-inchers, the 24-inchers.
Yeah.
And he hooked an absolute pig yesterday. And the look on a customer's face when that guy, you know, he literally looked at me and just said, "What do I do?" And I'm like, "Hold on."
Eyes popping out of his head. Like, holy smokes, what is going on? Drag screaming. Yeah.
And everything you talk to him on the way out to the spot, telling him
they
what
suddenly
to do,
forget, right?
Forgot everything. And I told him he would forget it. I said, and he hooked that one first thing 45 minutes into the trip. And he goes, "You weren't kidding." And those snook are everything's eating small baits right now, a 3.5-inch paddle tail. The Houdini, anything in a mullet pattern, really.
Okay.
Don't want to use, they're not hitting on white this year for some reason. Maybe back in the creeks they might be hitting whites. I haven't really, really fished the creeks really heavy this week. But it's been that olive back.
So some darker
a pearl belly,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they've been really hitting on. And when they hit it, you literally, if you find a couple of ladyfish, just be aware there might be a big old snook in the area. And that's been the pattern. You get into a ladyfish tanglement, and the next thing you know, you're drag screaming, and you're like, "Wow, it's not a ladyfish."
Yeehaw!
Yeah,
hang on. Well, that's awesome. It's great to hear that you've been out on the water this past week and you've had some good trips, and I'm sure you're still working on some rod builds. I know you're a busy guy.
I'll be working on rod builds for the next 4 days because I broke my trailer yesterday, so I am off the water for 4 days until my trailer's repaired.
Oh, man. Well, at least you'll get caught up on those rods, so that's a plus.
Yeah, no, I'll be getting caught up on the rods. And I tell you honestly, with the weather pattern that it looks like for the next couple of days, I'm not going to miss it. I'm kind of burnt after this week, and I need a couple down days in the shop. And so it's a
couple of days in the AC. There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, my 3-year maintenance kind of popped up on me a little shorter than a little sooner than it should have happened. So, all right.
Well, thanks for the report, Jim. Appreciate you calling in, and we're looking forward to having you back in the studio on July 29th. We will not on air next Saturday because of iCast, so we'll catch up with you the following Saturday with another report. So,
and if you're up there on Friday and I decide to head up there with Kim, we'll give you a shout.
Yeah, definitely. Shoot me a text and we'll connect up there. All right.
And other than that, the show for that 29th, The Little Red Head. That's what we're going to talk about.
All right. We'll look forward to that, Jim. Thanks. Have a great day and
a great weekend.
Say hi to Kim. All right. Bye-bye. That is Captain Jim Fortman calling in from the 10,000 Islands. He is at backwaterfishingnaples.net. And we are going to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida, ESPNSWFL.com, and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. Presented by Sportsman's Wholesale, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, and the Twisted Fork. We'll be back.
Down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away.
A message from the Florida Forest Service. Yard waste burning is one of the leading causes of wildfires in Florida. You can prevent wildfire by clearing yard debris after hurricanes. Being wildfire ready is being hurricane ready. Learn to burn safely at BeWildfireReadyFL.com.
Every new episode of Do What You Love brings you a fascinating guest. How about Jesse Cole, who founded the viral sensation The Savannah Bananas? Or Jack Hopewell, currently playing Jesus on Jesus Christ Superstar's national tour? Nancy Frates, mother of Pete Frates, the inspiration behind the ALS Bucket Challenge? Or the prop queen herself, Ariel Epstein? All of these episodes available right now. All you have to do is search Do What You Love and hear our conversations that will inspire you to do just that.